Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Americans are in love with an unregulated drug. In small amounts, it can make you feel happy, productive, and creative. But 10 grams, a heaping teaspoon, could kill you. Many Americans say they can't get through a day without this drug. It's consumed all over the world on a daily basis. It's in medicines, chocolate, tea, and soda, and can be easily purchased in stores and cafes across the country. We're talking about caffeine. 8 of the top-selling drinks in the United States are caffeinated. According to a study from the National Coffee Drinking Trends Survey, 63% of Americans drink coffee every day, and you might be enjoying a cup right now. But how are those drinks, and especially that drug, affecting you? For all of its prevalence in our society, caffeine is still widely unregulated and uncontrolled. According to today's guest, Murray Carpenter, caffeine is the largest, least regulated, least understood, and most popular drug in the U.S. In his new book, Caffeinated, he writes, quote, 3 years ago, when I decided to follow caffeine where it led me, I thought the drug was fantastic. Not only was it the cheapest, easiest way to rev up my day, increase my concentration, and boost my productivity, I felt sure that it must not really be bad for you. If it were, science would have revealed it by now, and that the industry must be pretty big. But as the story took me to coffee farms of central Guatemala, the world's largest synthetic caffeine factory in China, an energy shop bottler in New Jersey, and beyond, I learned that I had underestimated caffeine on all accounts. End quote. Murray Carpenter is author of Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. He's a freelance journalist who has written for the New York Times, Wired, National Geographic, and other publications. And Murray joins me here in studio. Hi, Murray. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So I have to say, I was wondering if you were going to come in with a cup of coffee this morning.
Yeah, I just finished one. Yeah.
Well, because you started this journey a couple of years ago, and you've been following caffeine for a long time, how did what you learn change your personal habits?
That's a great question. I've been a coffee drinker for decades now, but I actually moderated my consumption a little bit. And this was because one of the researchers I talked to, he asked how much caffeine I use daily. And I said 400 to 500 milligrams. You know, we were caffeine geeks talking to one another in milligrams at that point. And he just suggested, well, you know, you might do well with a little less. So I cut it back a little. So it's about now I'm down to, or at, I should say, 3 to 4 small, like 6 to 8 ounce cups a day.
Have you noticed a difference in your health and how you feel?
Not necessarily, but I'd say it seems to be a good amount for me. You know, I mean, the more caffeine you take in any form, the higher your tolerance gets. And so, like any drug, you sort of want to be taking the lowest dose that's going to give you the optimal effect.
Do you think people consider caffeine to be a drug because it's so prevalent in our society? And I don't hear people talking about it like that.
That's a great question. I think... No, in most cases, no. But it clearly is a drug, and scientists have known this for over a century. It's been referred to as a drug, which is to say, we know that if we take caffeine in certain doses, it's going to have very predictable psychoactive and physiological effects on people. So it's clearly a drug in that respect. I think the reason we don't think of it as a drug is because it's easier sort of to think of the fact that we really love our coffee or our tea or our colas than, oh man, I just have to have a little more caffeine right now.
And what is caffeine?
So caffeine is a very simple chemical. It's an alkaloid. It occurs naturally in plants all over the world. And this is one of the fascinating things. Its primary role seems to be as an insecticide. And so it occurs in chocolate and in tea, in yerba mate, which we talked about a little earlier, and coffee, cola nuts, etc. One of the interesting things about it is wherever it does occur, people seem to have figured out pretty quickly to put it to use as a stimulant. Humans, yeah.
It's amazing what effect it does have on the body. A couple people at the station did an experiment. I didn't because I can't handle caffeine. But our producer, Becca, she doesn't drink coffee at all. So she had a cup this morning and says she feels horrible right now. She's really jittery. Her stomach hurts. And then Joe Burke, who used to drink a pot of coffee, said it made him kind of sick. And so he went down to a cup a day just to see how it would feel. And he said it feels much, much better. I stopped drinking coffee about 20 years ago because I had a mild case of repetitive stress injury, and my doctor said it adds tension to the nerves, so I just cut it out. And if I have tea with caffeine without knowing it, I get really, really jittery. So I try to avoid it altogether. I mean, it's really interesting when you look at how it affects certain people.
Yeah, and you're bringing up a lot of great issues right there. And so one of them is, of course, tolerance. And so if you use caffeine regularly, you develop a tolerance to it. And if you have no tolerance, if you're caffeine naive, as the scientists say, then you have one small cup of coffee, you know, as Becca did this morning, and it can really have a strong effect on you. And so, yeah, the other thing I think we underestimate is the strength of a cup of coffee. I mean, we take coffee for granted, but you know, a 12-ounce cup of coffee can have 240 milligrams of caffeine. A 12-ounce cup of Starbucks, that's the equivalent of three Red Bulls, which people think of as, you know, sort of super caffeinated.
Well, and that's the other interesting thing, is because I'm not a coffee drinker, I don't understand the differences between coffee, but there are a lot of people are really into it, like wine. But you also point out that every cup of coffee is different in terms of how much caffeine is in it.
The caffeine contents in coffee can vary dramatically. And the best sort of example of this is a researcher in Florida who went into the same Starbucks cafe and ordered the same coffee, same 16-ounce coffee, 6 days in a row. And one day it had as little as 240 milligrams. Another day it had 560 milligrams. So more than twice as much. So the most amped up coffee he got would be as much as seven Red Bulls in one cup of Starbucks. And so, I mean, to compare this, for example, to wine, it would be as though if you were drinking wine and one glass had, you know, half as much alcohol as another. So it does vary dramatically. It's a surprise.
Why does Starbucks do that?
Well, so Starbucks isn't consciously doing that. What's going on is that coffee has naturally variable caffeine levels. And so it's a natural product, and tea is the same way, but it seems to vary a little bit less. But it can depend on the growing conditions. It can depend on how it was harvested. There's a lot of variables. So even if you control as many variables as you can, use the same amount of water, same amount of coffee grounds, prepared the same way every day, you're still going to get some variation.
Hmm. And what did your research tell you about what this does to the body? What concerns you the most? And does it differ based on, for example, how much we weigh, our genetic makeup?
Yes. Let me get back to how much we weigh in genetic makeup. But the two big things that are major concerns, I think, are two of the sort of most common problems in our society is insomnia or sleeplessness and anxiety. So some people can drink, you know, chug coffee right up to the moment they go to sleep and sleep like babies. Others of us know that if you have a strong cup of coffee late in the day, you might be lying in bed with your thoughts racing and, you know, you think, I shouldn't have had that cup of coffee. But it can have more subtle effects on your later stages of sleep. So even if you go to sleep, a sleep researcher could tell from how you're moving late in the day, even if you had a small amount of cup of coffee or caffeine early in the day. So it can have pretty profound effects on sleep. And since sleeplessness is a huge issue in society, I think this is really underestimated. Anxiety, another one, is very prevalent, and caffeine can trigger, you know, too much caffeine can trigger really anxious feelings in almost anyone. But for people who are prone to anxiety, caffeine can really be a trigger for some very unpleasant feelings. And a lot of people don't associate the caffeine with the anxiety they're experiencing. And just anecdotally, I understand that a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists don't ask, you know, it's not the first line of questioning, you know, are you drinking a lot of coffee? So those are two things. But genetics and body size, this is fascinating. So as I mentioned, some people can drink coffee right up to the moment they go to sleep. No problem. And other people would have a cup of decaf in the morning, you know, 12 milligrams of caffeine, and just really be wired. And I sort of used to poo-poo that idea before I did this the research for the book. But some people are just very, very sensitive to caffeine. And a lot of this difference is genetic. And body size, of course, makes a big difference. So if you have a teenager who's drinking, you know, a Diet Coke and they weigh 90 pounds, that's the equivalent of me drinking a Red Bull. So, yeah, there are just a lot of variables that play into how caffeine affects us.
And it might also, it'll depend on what you're eating that day, how you're feeling, what drugs you take, if you take birth control, for example.
Yes, so that's interesting, too. Birth control pills, women on birth control will metabolize caffeine more slowly than the rest of us. So they're actually producing less of the enzyme that breaks caffeine down into its metabolites. And conversely, if you're a smoker, you produce more of that enzyme. So you'll produce caffeine or metabolize caffeine twice as quickly. So caffeine has a stronger effect on women on birth control pills and a weaker effect on people who are smokers. So that's one of the strange things, yeah.
We're speaking with journalist Murray Carpenter about his new book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. And he traveled around the world to investigate caffeine. He went to coffee farms in central Guatemala, a synthetic caffeine factory in China, and an energy shot bottler in New Jersey. And I'm sure a lot of you drink coffee or sodas. We'll also talk about some of the things caffeine is prescription drugs, for example. A lot of people don't know that. And so if you do drink caffeine on a regular basis, we'd love to hear from you. How does it affect you? What changes do you see in your body? And if you've changed your habits, why have you done it? And what changes have you seen? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So we know it's in coffee. We know it's in energy drinks. What else is it in that we might not know about?
Well, a lot of people don't understand it. It's in Anacin and Excedrin. So caffeine has a complex relationship with headaches. It can actually trigger headaches in some people, but for most people, it can actually be a very effective therapy. So Anacin and Excedrin are formulated with caffeine. There's some strange things that have caffeine in them. I saw the other day in a grocery store, one a day vitamins with energy, like one a day. So vitamins with energy, they're vitamin tablets with caffeine. So it's in, I think, a lot of places that we don't immediately expect it.
And these companies don't have to tell us that it's in it.
Well, they have to tell us that it's in it, but they don't have to tell us the quantities. And this is one of the very strange things. So even soft drink bottlers and energy drink bottlers are not required to label the quantity of caffeine that's in a product. And I think that's sort of the very least information that a consumer needs. Now, I should say most of the major bottlers have started doing this voluntarily. Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper, Snapple, they've been doing this voluntarily. But still, I think FDA does have a role to play here in educating consumers and having clear labeling is really what we need for that.
You also write about the fact that most of the caffeine in these drinks, these energy drinks and soft drinks, is not extracted from coffee or tea, but chemically synthesized in overseas pharmaceutical labs.
That was a surprise to me. Yeah, I think like most people that the primary place you get the caffeine powder that's blended into soft drinks or blended into energy drinks was from decaffeinating coffee. But that's really an expensive way to do it. I visited a decaffeination facility in Texas where they do this, and the caffeine is really a byproduct. The primary product is the decaffeinated coffee because it's very expensive to take the caffeine out of coffee.
How do they do that? Because decaf coffee is so huge now, and luckily I recently found decaf green tea.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so I don't know exactly how they do the process for tea, but the plant I visited that decaffeinates coffee is really amazing. It's a huge operation in Houston, and they use what's called supercritical carbon dioxide. And so this is carbon dioxide at high heat and high pressure, and it has different qualities when it's in that state. And it actually is able to sort of float through the coffee beans and extract the caffeine and leave most of the flavor intact. So it's kind of interesting process. But that caffeine is just a byproduct, and that facility produces about 1 million pounds annually. And I started to look into this. I realized, well, we're consuming 15 million pounds or importing 15 million pounds of this stuff.
Wow.
And to put that into context, it would be enough to fill a freight train more than 2 miles long. So, yeah, a lot of it is coming from pharmaceutical plants that synthesize it. And primarily these are in China, but also in India and Germany.
Wow. So how does that affect the drink? I mean, not only are you drinking something with a lot of caffeine, but it's synthesized caffeine.
Well, so I think some people would want to know that their caffeine is naturally extracted. In your body, there's no indication that it would have a different effect if it's clean, if it's pure. So pure synthetic caffeine versus pure refined caffeine should have the same effect on your body. I think there's other issues that would be concerning, which is, the pharmaceutical industry, particularly in China, is quite opaque. And, you know, FDA is having quite a time, and the commissioner now, Margaret Hamburg, is making this an issue of trying to ramp up inspections, because we're importing something like 80% of our pharmaceuticals now, and much of it comes from China. I think the surprise is that among the output of these pharmaceutical plants is the caffeine in our Coca-Cola.
We're talking with Murray Carpenter, author of Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. The United States imported 3.5 billion pounds of coffee in 2012 and more than 15 million pounds of powdered caffeine annually. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you drink caffeine on a regular basis, how long have you been doing it? How does it affect you, both positive and negative, and what questions do you have about caffeine? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Hillary in Seaside. Hi, Hillary. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I was just inspired to call. I listen to you all the time, but I'm usually driving. And I wanted to say that caffeine, coffee in particular, I've drank for probably 30 years, and I've worked in coffee for a number of years, and I was a cigarette smoker in the past. I enjoy beer. Coffee has been kind of like the vice I've had, and there was a period of time when I did put it down for a while, but it was very, very difficult for me, and basically it's been like the most addictive thing I've always had in my life, and I love coffee. So
that's your comment is great. You know, I think as I talk to people, as I wrote the book, and now that I'm going out and doing readings, one of the most common comments I get from people is, "Hey, man, this is my last remaining vice. Please tell me this isn't bad for me." So yes, it's addictive, but for most of us, we tolerate it quite well. And if you like it, I hope you'll keep it up.
You know, we just did a show yesterday about all of the food labels, like organic, non-GMO, non-gluten. If you do want to stick with your habit, is a fair trade organic blend better than a non-organic blend in terms of your health? Does it matter?
Right. In terms of coffee, I'm not sure how much difference it is. How much benefit you'll get from organic. I think there are a lot of reasons, obviously, to choose organic and fair trade coffee. The conditions that the growers face in Central and South America are pretty remarkable. Mm. And of course, they're sort of astounded that we're paying $4 and $5 for a cup of coffee.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I'm not sure that by the time the coffee is washed and roasted and ground, you're getting a lot of residual, pesticides.
Yeah. It must be really interesting to hear that reaction. Also, just that it's amazing when you look at how Starbucks has just completely blown up. And anytime I take a road trip, I mean, you can find a Starbucks anywhere almost, and they all look the same, and the prices are almost the same.
It's remarkable. Yeah. And it's not just in the U.S. When I visited China, I went to Starbucks, and the Starbucks is the same there. It's an upscale brand. They recently did something that maybe most people, because they're not caffeine geeks like me, didn't pay attention to. But they've sort of rebranded. The logo doesn't have the name Starbucks. It's just the mermaid head, right? And which is perfect for launch on the international market. It's a very well-branded product. And in China, it's a prestige product. People will buy a cup of Starbucks and they'll walk around with that thing all day long.
Just to say that they've been at Starbucks,
yeah,
because it's a status symbol.
It's a status symbol.
Wow. Well, thanks again for calling in, Hillary. Let's go next to Barry in San Francisco. Hi, Barry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I found that caffeine gives me caffeine withdrawal gives me very severe headaches, which are accompanied by nausea, vomiting. So they're like migraine headaches, but they're caffeine withdrawal headaches.
And do they go away when you have a cup of coffee?
Yes, a cup of coffee or caffeine will make them go away.
Yeah, wow. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So withdrawal, I mean, when we talked earlier about the fact that caffeine is a drug, it's not just a drug, but I use the terms that it's an addictive drug and an addiction throughout the book. And one of the sort of hallmarks of addictive drugs, it's not the only, but is the fact that you do have withdrawal symptoms when you go without. And the most classic withdrawal symptom, yours is an extreme case, but is the withdrawal headache. And it's interesting that you mention, that it can be severe, because it seems to be at least part of what's going on with the caffeine withdrawal headache is that caffeine is a vasoconstrictor. So it's actually constricting the blood vessels in your brain. And when you go without caffeine, if you're a habitual user and you go into withdrawal, those blood vessels in your brain are relaxing a little bit, and there's your sort of throbbing headache. And it's also this mechanism that makes it a very effective treatment for people who suffer from migraines, and why it's in prescription migraine medication, because it really can alleviate headaches. But yes, I mean, for a lot of people, if they're addicted to caffeine, the most classic symptom is that withdrawal headache.
For people who might want to cut back and they deal with withdrawal, I'm sure, again, this depends on your body type, but how long does that last?
Okay, so if you go cold turkey, which a lot of people don't recommend, but it seems to peak on about the third day, and within about a week, you should be pretty much clear. And one of the other interesting things is, although we develop a partial tolerance to caffeine, if you completely, have a washout period, maybe a week or 2 weeks, your baseline is back to zero. So you're going to be not, you won't have a tolerance to caffeine at that point. But yeah, withdrawal seems to peak on about day two or three.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Barry. We have an email from Rose who says, what about those of us who are not affected at all by caffeine? Unfortunately, she writes, it does not wake me up at all or do anything. I drink coffee because I like the taste, but it does nothing.
And I've heard from other people who have the same experience. And this gets back to the genetic variability. Some people, and we don't know enough about this yet, but for some people, for some reason, it just does not seem to affect them very much. And I think this is one of the sort of frontiers of research of caffeine research that people are going to be looking into as personalized medicine and genomics gets more advanced. We might someday be able to tell if someone is a person who should avoid caffeine, if someone's a person who has absolute tolerance to caffeine, as this caller does, but it gets back to this genetic variability.
An email from Rob says, a great show. In his book, The Vitamin Bible, Earl Mindell described caffeine as the most psychoactive substance known. The first time I took an Excedrin, I did not know it had caffeine, and I felt like a hummingbird after it kicked in.
Yeah, and again, a lot of people don't know Excedrin has caffeine, but yeah, it's a powerful drug. And I think that is one of the points I try to make in the book, that I think because so many of us use it daily, we really underestimate its effectiveness. It maybe doesn't make you feel like a hummingbird all the time, but it can have a strong effect.
We're speaking with Murray Carpenter about his new book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. And we'd love to hear from you. We have one line open. If you drink caffeine on a regular basis, how does it make you feel? And what questions do you have for Murray Carpenter about how caffeine affects our bodies? We'll be back after this.
This is your call on KALW. If you'd like to join today's conversation with a perspective that you haven't heard yet, or you've got a question that you feel needs to be answered, here's the number to call, 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. Feel free to send an email if you'd rather do that. The address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Mm-hmm.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll be speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The Tampa Bay Times, Will Hobson, and Michael LaForgia's series exposed the inhumane treatment of people in a homeless recovery program. And then the Center for Public Integrity's Chris Hamby revealed how doctors and lawyers worked with the coal industry, including Massey, to deny benefits to minors suffering from the deadly black lung disease. So that's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, I'm speaking with Murray Carpenter about his new book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. More than 15 million pounds of powdered caffeine are imported into the United States every year, and the U.S. imports 3.5 billion pounds of coffee. And Murray traveled around the world to investigate caffeine, the industry, how it affects our bodies and our minds. And if you have any questions or comments about your caffeine habit or maybe old habit, we'd love to hear you at 866, hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Marie Louise writes, is there any comparison made between coffee consumption in the United States and, let's say, France or Europe in general? It seems that in most cases, United States citizens overdo many things. She says, in my visits to my home country in France, I don't see people with a cup of coffee as constantly as I see here.
That's a great question. That's a terrific question. I don't know directly a comparison with France. One of the interesting statistics is that in the UK, they're getting more caffeine from coffee than from tea, which is a surprise. Huh. I will say this, in the Scandinavian countries, drink twice as much coffee as we do here in the U.S. So they are really, really big coffee drinkers. And just another little tidbit along these lines, that this was a real shocker to me. People in the coffee industry know this well, but I didn't know this, that our coffee consumption in the U.S. peaked around 1950, and our grandparents were really drinking more coffee than we are. And there are a lot of factors that play into that, but despite I think we have a sort of conspicuous coffee consumption now. In our grandparents' era, there was just always coffee pots going everywhere, and people were just drinking it.
And they drank almost twice as much, right?
Yeah, they drank almost twice as much coffee as we do, which really is surprising. And a big part of it is that they didn't have all the myriad other products that we have now, particularly soft drinks, Coca-Cola, et cetera, they weren't as abundant. I mean, just as coffee consumption has declined, soft drink consumption spiked. So the lines crossed about 1974.
Why do you think it's double in Scandinavian countries?
That's a great question, and I really don't know the answer to that. You know, I mean, sort of conjecture is it's big in New England and the Pacific Northwest, and maybe it's something about, like, cold winters and dark places. I really have no idea, but they really do love their coffee.
What about the sort of cafe culture in the United States? Because that's been booming over the last few decades. How has that changed our relationship with caffeine?
Well, for one thing, it definitely has done is it's given us all greater access to better coffee than we ever have had before in the U.S. And we were just talking about Starbucks being everywhere. I mean, no one, even in like the small town in Maine that I live in, no one has to suffer through a really lousy cup of diner coffee. There's always these other options. But it has increased consumption a bit. So the actual nadir, the low point in coffee consumption in the U.S. was probably around 1995, and it's regained some maybe 20% due to this boom. And one of the interesting things is over the last 10 years or so, teenagers are starting to get more caffeine from coffee than they used to. The teenagers' primary source of caffeine is soft drinks, but they're getting more caffeine from coffee. And I think partly this has to do with the Starbucks phenomenon.
What about profit? It's always amazing to me that people spend so much money on a specialty coffee. Like, you can still get a coffee for what, like $1.50 with just plain coffee. But if you get one of these specialty drinks and it's large, it can cost you up to about $4.50. So what is the profit margin on this?
Yeah. And just another little anecdote. I saw a trucker pay $5 for a coffee drink at a Starbucks at a truck stop in Maine. I think, man, you know, when you're at that point, you've really won, right? Yeah, there's huge profits. There's a lot of money to be made in caffeinated beverages. Just to give you a sense of the scale of this industry, soft drinks alone, and again, most of them are caffeinated, are worth more than $75 billion retail in this country annually. Coffee's worth another $30 to $35 billion. Energy drinks, several billion more. Tea, probably $10 billion. So we're talking well over $120 billion annually that we're paying for these products. And it's really, there's some great stories of American entrepreneurships. There are billionaires who have made it on caffeine, you know.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line. Let's hear from Gabriella in San Francisco. Hi, Gabriella. Welcome to the show.
Hello, this is Gabriella.
Oh, hi, Gabriella.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I would like to ask about green coffee. And what about the green coffee pill that they claim that, you know, you lose weight, they control your intake of food. Is that true? And is it safe to drink it, not to eat it?
Okay, so this is a little bit controversial, but I'm really glad you asked it. All of the hype over green coffee extract seems to have come from one study that's not particularly well controlled, and I believe it was conducted by an American researcher, but the subjects were in India. So, and it claimed very dramatic weight losses. My sense is I would wait until we have better indications that green coffee extract is an effective weight loss strategy, but boy, has it caught on! And again, came back to Starbucks, they have these new refreshers, a line of sort of high-end soft drinks that claim they have energy from green coffee extract, and of course, that's just the caffeine that's giving you the energy. But yeah, green coffee extract has really taken off, but there's really not great research to support its effectiveness as a weight loss strategy.
All right. Well, thank you, Gabriella. Nice to hear from you. Let's go next to Reba in San Francisco. Hi, Reba. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. This is actually Reza. Thank you so much.
Oh, hi. Sorry, Reza.
No problem. The question I have is there a qualitative difference between tea caffeine and coffee caffeine, their cumulative effect with whatever other material is in the drink? Because I tolerate tea. I can take two pitchers of tea and feel no effect, GI or jitteriness. But with one cup of coffee, I have GI problems, and I can certainly sense the coffee a lot more, the caffeine a lot more.
What kind of tea are you drinking?
Black iced tea, usually.
Well, that's a great question, and thanks for that. So this comes up a lot, and one person I talked to as I was doing my research, she described coffee as an angry buzz and tea as a mellow buzz. The caffeine itself is going to have, you know, the same effect. One of the big differences, of course, is that it's in so much lower concentrations in tea than in coffee. So that accounts for some of the difference. You mentioned GI effects. You know, some of the effects, the GI effects that coffee has, like a laxative effect, are not really based on the caffeine, but other constituents of coffee.
Hmm.
So there are other aspects to the plants. And some people think, and the research that I've seen doesn't really seem to support this, that theanine, another component of tea, calms you while the caffeine, you know, and mitigates the caffeinated effect. But I think a lot of the difference has to do with the different caffeine concentrations.
All right. Great question. Thank you for calling in, Reza. Let's go next to Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. I had a couple caffeine issues. One when I was in high school, I stayed up late to work on a paper, and I drank about cups of Lipton tea. And when I finally went to bed at about 3 in the morning, I remember having sort of hallucinations, and I felt like a train came and went over my chest and heard the loud noise. And I don't know if it was sleep deprivation or the tea, but I just always remember that. So I haven't really had that kind of tea ever since then.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There is a relationship between caffeine and some hallucinations. Some people can hear things if you give them too much caffeine, and others can actually smell smells that aren't there.
Yeah, well, it's just stuck with me all these years. And the other thing, when I don't really drink coffee very much, but if I drink coffee, or especially if I have a Coke, I have to pee very badly. That seems, with any caffeinated products, that happens to me, and I wonder if that's kind of typical.
Well, and this is another great question. It comes up all the time. The strange thing is the research doesn't support this, that caffeine is a diuretic. If anything, it's a very mild diuretic, but this is I can't tell this to people like you or any of us who have had a cup of coffee and then sat in a traffic jam, you know? A lot of people seem to experience this, and yet for whatever reason, the research just doesn't seem to support the fact that the caffeine's a strong diuretic. If anything, it may be a mild one.
All right, thanks for calling, Steve. Let's hear next from Vivian in San Rafael. Hi, Vivian.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm mildly caffeine sensitive, and so when I heard that birth control pills increase caffeine sensitivity, it made me wonder, does a woman's regular hormonal cycle have more and less sensitive periods in it?
That's a really good question. And I'm not sure about that. I do know that women who are pregnant are more sensitive to caffeine. So, I mean, there clearly is some hormonal influence, and that's probably an area that would be interesting to learn more about. But I really don't know much about that. It wouldn't surprise me to find that there is a significant influence there.
It seemed like you found a lot of contradictory information about all of these issues.
That's one of the amazing things, and one of the challenges in writing this book is caffeine has really been well researched for more than 100 years, and there are thousands and thousands of studies. And I think all of us as consumers of just news, you know, one week there'd be a big story that says, you know, coffee is great for you, and next week, you know, caffeine's going to make you forgetful. So, yeah, the challenge really was to try to figure out what's the good science and what's junk.
How did you do it? Because I'm sure you had to sift through so much.
My strategy was to find the people who I really trusted as sources, some of the experts in the field, and sit down with them for, you know, hours and say, you know, A, what should I know about this? And B, who else should I talk to? And, you know, by using trusted sources, they really helped me winnow it down.
I'm speaking with Murray Carpenter about his book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. Caffeine is a $120 billion annual industry. We're talking about a lot of money here and a lot of caffeine. More than 15 million pounds of powdered caffeine are imported to the United States every year, and 3.5 billion pounds of coffee is imported into the U.S. We've got full lines, still clearly a lot of interest in this issue, but you can give us a call in a few minutes. Oh, one just opened at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Lydia in Santa Cruz. Hi, Lydia. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. I was in Switzerland. Now, this was about 20 years ago with family at the home of a man who was a long-term employee of a coffee company in Basel. And I believe that it was Nescafe, but I'm not certain. He told us at this gathering, and this was an intimate conversation, but I'm sure I can speak it. He said that there were 700 chemicals in this company's regular coffee and 800 chemicals in its powdered coffee. Those figures have stayed with me.
So, well, do you think that he means added chemicals?
Yes.
Well, that would be news to me. Coffee is a very complex compound, and it does, in addition to caffeine, has a number of other natural constituents. But to the best of my knowledge, and the way I have followed coffee right from the tree to the cup, and I've been through, to warehouses, to coffee farms, to roasters and grinders, and so I've never seen a point at which chemicals would have been added. You know, that's not to say that some people don't do it, but it would be a surprise to me to find that it was going on.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. I want to read a few emails. Phil in Pacifica says, I'm an acupuncturist, and a lot of people ask me questions about coffee. I always tell them you have to be honest with yourself and see how it affects you. Personally, it's a mood enhancer for me, and one cup a day greatly improves my day. One piece of advice I often tell people is to make sure they eat before they have their first cup in the morning. Thanks for the email, Phil. We have an email from Susan who says, a number of years ago, I claimed to my chiropractor that all of my joints ached and felt like they needed to be oiled. He asked me how much coffee I drank and suggested I quit. I did, and my joints no longer ache.
Wow. Well, it sounds like that was a good move. I don't have anything in the book on that, but I'm glad it worked for you. The mood enhancer that the other listener brought up is really interesting because I think, you know, in the book, I kind of get deep into the weeds of how caffeine works and, you know, how it affects your acuity, et cetera. But really, what the reason most of us take it most of the time is it simply makes you feel good. And it really is a mood enhancer.
What about the fact that, and you didn't write about this extensively, but doctors do say that it adds tension to the nerves.
Yeah, and no, I didn't get into that. But that, you know, again, with your other listener's comment, I think this would be an interesting area for more study. I mean, I could see that there would be a possibility if you're super caffeinated and then you're tense, mm-hmm. that it could affect you in those ways.
All right. Well, thank you for the emails. And let's go back to calls. Let's hear from Scott in Berkeley. Hi, Scott.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to comment on your mentioning the vasoconstricting properties of caffeine. I would say, in my case, that's certainly true. I have a medical condition called an arteriovenous malformation, and it took me a long time, 15 years, before I saw the link between coffee as a vasoconstrictor and a grand mal seizure, actually. So I weaned myself off, and the problems pretty much went away. I drink a lot of tea. That doesn't seem to have the same effect. And I switched to cacao, which is a vasodilator, which is definitely made a difference. So,
wow, interesting. Yeah, I mean, and again, I think your point, your experience, underscores the aspects of caffeine that I think we underestimate its effects on our bodies, and they can be quite powerful in some people.
All right, thank you for calling, Scott. Let's hear next from Matt in San Francisco. Hi, Matt.
It's not Matt. It's Pat.
Oh, hi, Pat. Sorry about that.
Me, I'm a big coffee drinker. I average about a pot a day per coffee. I put in a pinch of salt when I make the coffee to limit the acidity in the coffee. But I've learned over the years that I can't drink instant coffee because I can't neutralize that acidity.
Interesting. Yeah, the acidity is a real troublesome for some people. And you know, the old timers used to sometimes boil an eggshell in with the coffee. And I've always wondered if it was the alkalinity in the eggshell that makes them want to do that. I've heard of other people preparing coffee with just a touch of baking soda, because yeah, some people can't handle the acidity very well.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Let's hear from Roberta in Richmond. Hi, Roberta.
I have three phases with coffee. One when I was addicted to bifetamine back in those days, and I used a lot of coffee to get weaned from bifetamine. And then when I got pregnant, I couldn't stand the thought or smell of coffee, and went off it completely for several years. Then I was diagnosed with MS, and what you just said about nerve tension is very interesting. I never thought about it. But I use caffeine a lot, and it's now come to the point where the MS Society recommends it, is too strong, but suggests it. And I wondered what your thoughts were about that whole relationship.
That's an area I haven't looked into, but it's fascinating. I mean, there are some potential therapeutic benefits to caffeine. I mean, there are suggestions that it helps to stave off, in some people, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So it does have some significant effects that can be beneficial. I really don't know anything about its role in MS.
All right. Thank you for calling in. We have an email from Carla who says, I'm enjoying your show. However, must you discuss Starbucks as though it's the standard? I love coffee and will do anything to avoid this chain, primarily due to its heavy corporate presence and advertising, but also because of its mediocre and overly expensive product. And I'll read the rest of her email, but can you talk about that? Because
yeah.
I've heard from friends whose siblings have worked at Starbucks, and they say that over the years, the coffee quality has gone downhill because the company is so popular now.
Okay. Well, so there are two things going on there. One, Starbucks gets to the same degree that Coca-Cola is the exemplar of the soft drink industry, Starbucks is now the sort of exemplar of the gourmet coffee phenomenon. So I think it's become shorthand for this standardized, branded gourmet coffee culture. So I think that's the reason that I use the phrase so much. And it has become branded in the same way that people used to go out and get a Coca-Cola. People now go out not for a coffee, but often for a Starbucks. In terms of their coffee going downhill, you know, there have been a couple of trends going on. They used to roast their coffee quite darkly, and they've shifted back to a milder roasting style. I think Starbucks still buy, my friends in the industry tell me they still buy some, you know, high quality beans, and you can get a good cup of coffee at Starbucks. But of course, the competition now is extreme. I mean, there are so many wonderful coffee shops, and yes, many of them are locally owned, and they make terrific coffees.
We should also mention that Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz makes about $9,200 an hour, and he recently told NPR that he opposes raising wages to $15 an hour. A lot of workers are calling for a $15 wage.
Right. And, you know, there's another related aspect of Starbucks that fascinates me to no end. I mentioned their Refreshers product earlier. You know, I think when they in the company's early days in Seattle, they were sort of considered crunchy, organic, wholesome, something that would be in opposition to, say, Coca-Cola or, you know, a big multinational brand. But not only have they become, of course, a big multinational brand, but now they're moving very directly into these bottled products. So they have, and they're bottling them in partnership with Pepsi-Cola. So the company has really evolved in a way that I don't think a lot of people would have anticipated 30 years ago.
And there are worker movements around the country protesting Starbucks for its treatment of workers and low wages.
And the other aspect of this is that there is a big controversy over what standards can be used for fair trade. And Starbucks was one of the companies that was pushing to, they would say, change. Other people would say relax the fair trade standards. Sorry, go ahead.
When you went to China, did you look for local coffee shops, or do they have them?
There's not much local coffee. There's an interesting thing. I mean, they're growing. They're growing for sure. Coffee and coffee is growing in China. There is a very interesting phenomenon in China, and particularly in Japan, where there are many canned coffees. And for example, in Japan, Georgia brand canned coffee, which is produced by Coca-Cola, is a $1 billion brand in Japan. Mm. So that's a lot. But there are increasingly a number of smaller and local coffee shops in China.
All right. Well, thank you, Carla, for your email. I'm glad you wrote in to bring up these issues. We have time for a few more callers. Let's go to Mary in San Francisco. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I have a question. I gave up drinking coffee years ago, but I drink green tea in the morning, caffeinated, and then later on in the day, decaf. Would you recommend, for health reasons, not drinking the caffeinated? Because I can go either way, or have a, you know, are there health reasons to drink the caffeinated green tea, or is decaf just as good?
Do you notice any differences between the caffeinated and the decaf?
Only if I drink caffeinated later on in the day, it keeps me awake.
Okay.
I can't drink it past like 2, or I can't sleep. That's the only difference.
Yeah. If you're comfortable with your, you know, with your caffeine consumption, with your green tea, your caffeinated green tea, there's no health indication to suggest that it's there's nothing to suggest that it's not healthful over the long term. As long as you're sleeping well and you're not anxious, it's probably a perfectly healthful habit.
I just got an email. I have to laugh. Serena just wrote in, I've noticed that there are a couple of guys I've dated in the past who were so annoying to be around when caffeinated. They would talk about themselves nonstop. I don't think that's the caffeine, frankly, Serena.
That's crazy. I think, you know, one of the indications of anyone who's had too much caffeine is that they can't stop talking, and I hope they won't be talking about themselves the
Sometimes
whole time.
Sometimes that's a very male trait, I got to say. But thank you for calling in, Serena. All right, let's hear from one more caller. Let's go to Cheryl in Palo Alto. Hi, Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl. Are you with us?
Hello? Oh, you've gotten me. This is Chris.
Oh, okay. Hi, Chris.
I just have a couple of questions. One is, I can't take caffeine from coffee, but I can drink chocolate, and I think chocolate's related. Isn't theobromine a related thing?
Yes, there's theobromine in chocolate, but there's also caffeine. Yeah.
What about caffeine and chocolate?
Great question. And the thing about caffeine and chocolate is it's there in lower concentrations than in coffee or tea. And the Hershey's milk chocolate, for example, has almost no caffeine because it has almost no real cocoa solids. But if you get like a really good dark chocolate, and you have a size about the size of a Hershey bar, you'll probably get about as much caffeine as you would in a good cup of green tea, so about 40 milligrams. Mm. So it is there, and it seems to be the caffeine, not the theobromine, that does have some effect there.
We have about 20 seconds left. What other trends do you see? I mean, it's really interesting to see this explode around the globe.
Yeah, I think the trends are just that we're getting more diverse, more creative sort of caffeine delivery mechanisms, and they range from gel strips to candy to gums. It's there seems to be no end to the new caffeine products on the market.
Murray Carpenter is author of Caffeinated: How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. Murray, thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for your interest.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. Thanks for all of your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The Tampa Bay Times' Will Hobson and Michael LaForgia's series exposed the inhumane treatment of people in a homeless recovery program. And the Center for Public Integrity's Chris Hamby revealed how doctors and lawyers worked with the coal industry to deny benefits to minors suffering from the deadly black lung disease. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan, Ali Budner, and Becca Hoekstra produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.